Hey everybody. I'm Jolie. I'm a compulsive overeater. I live in Richmond, Virginia, and I have been back in program after having a 2-decade relapse. I have been back in program for 465 days. 465 days. So I want to just give people an idea of what it was like. What happened and what it's like now. And is there, I see, okay, so there's a timer. Good, good, good. I'll pay attention. I grew up in Southern California until we moved to Northwest Arkansas in the late 70s. And I came from a very stable home. Neither one of my parents drank. Just probably at like New Year's Eve parties or whatever. And I was really sheltered. I had a great childhood, just a wonderful, loving home. I'm the last of 7 kids, and all of my siblings are 10 plus years older than me. So my dad had 3 from his first marriage, and my mom had 3 from her first marriage, and then we melded together like the Brady Bunch. And I was, as you can imagine, pretty spoiled. That didn't occur to me until I became an adult that I was actually pretty spoiled, and I've made peace with that. My mom stayed home with me when I was little. And I got the luxury of having a full-time mom around me when my dad worked and my siblings were in school. I was born with asthma and allergies, like environmental stuff, molds, animal dander. So on top of the being spoiled, there was a pretty thick layer of overprotective nature from my mom. And because of my allergies, I had to go get allergy shots from the doctor every week. So we would drive from Fontana into San Bernardino, where my pediatrician was. I don't know how far away that is because we left when I was still a child. So I just remember that after every weekly appointment, my mom would take me to a fast food, a California specific fast food place. And I have memories of those happy days, just being with my mom, just me and my mom. And she would, we'd sit outside and she'd smoke and I'd play. And what that did for me is that at age 55, I still, doesn't matter what time of the day it is, if I leave the doctor's office, I want to go to get fast food. It's crazy what that muscle memory is like when you have a compulsive personality. I stopped eating anything like that in 2024, but if I went to the doctor today and left, there would be something in my head that would be like, you should go to blah, blah, blah drive-through. So even without knowing what she was doing, my mom was setting this tone for me in a little small body that was already a compulsive person. I grew up in Northwest Arkansas. I lost my dad when I was a month from being 14. So he had a massive heart attack at 58. He was like a month away from being 59, and I'll never forget that day. When you're 13, it doesn't matter if you're a male or a female, but I think that's an awful age for anyone to A, lose a parent, but B, go through puberty. And my siblings had all stayed in California because they were adults when we moved to Arkansas. So it was just me and my mom at that point. And my mom was 47. She was a widow. She's trying to manage a child who really started to overeat at that time. That was how I dealt with the loss of having my dad and It was the 80s, and you know, if you didn't have the right clothes or you didn't ha hang around with the right kids, whatever, you know, you just, I felt just in, just really not confident about myself. So I grew up without a dad, and I remember getting my driver's license and having the freedom of having a car, having a part-time job. Of course, it was at a fast food place. And being able to go through any drive-through or go get any kind of food that I wanted, and having the freedom and the privacy to eat it in my car and throw away the proof of any of it before I even got home. So if I went through some drive-through on my way home from school and ate it and then found some random trash can and threw it all away, you know, my mom was none the wiser. I'd get home and she'd be like, "Dinner's in 15 minutes." And I'd be like, "Awesome, what are we having?" So there was already a sense of overeating for me. Boys were important, but I felt, you know, inadequate in that I was heavy. I wasn't obese. And I think probably looking back at pictures of myself now, I honestly looked at myself and said, I was stunning. I mean, I just thought, now I look at that girl and I just think it's so sad that I grew up thinking that I was ugly, I was fat. But that was everything that I heard. And kids, as we know, are cruel. And I probably topped out at 180 in high school, but I'm 5'7". So I mean, that's not incredibly big. I wish that, you know, I could get down to 180, and you know, one day at a time, maybe I will. But I developed an addiction right after high school to a substance that helped me to lose weight. And that substance was methamphetamine. I did a lot of it. And I had, you know, picked up smoking as a teenager because all my friends smoked. It was the 80s. You know, if you, the bigger we could get our hair and the more hairspray and, you know, all the ripped up jeans and, you know, all of that stuff. So smoking went along with that. But I quickly found out that if I did speed, it made me not hungry. And guess what? I lost a bunch of weight, but it became painfully obvious that I was on drugs. So I made it to a 12-step program for narcotics in 1990, and I spent 2 years in Narcotics Anonymous. And what that did was that planted a seed in me that I will forever be grateful for. And I spent 2 years in the program. I quickly realized that there really wasn't any addiction there. Except for food. And it took, unfortunately, another decade before I found Overeaters Anonymous. I went back to California in the mid to late 90s and started working at Tower Records in Sherman Oaks. And then I transferred out here to Richmond, Virginia in 2001. So I was doing that. And I ran into somebody who offered to take me to a meeting. And I said, "What kind?" And you know, she told me, and I said, "Yeah, I think I probably need that." So I came into OA here in Richmond in 2002. And I looked at it, honestly, I looked at that program, at the program at that time as a social outlet. I didn't have a lot of friends here, only the kids that I worked with at Tower, and they were all much younger than me, and in college. And, you know, I just didn't really fit with that crowd, but I did with the people at OA. Now, looking back at that time, I can't tell you if I had a sponsor. I can't tell you if I worked the steps. I know that the closer I got to a fourth step, the more freaked out I got. And decided that, you know, I probably threw my hands up in the air and said, "This is bullshit, and I'm not coming anymore." And I didn't lose any weight, and why would I? I wasn't working a program. I remember people being here who abstained from the white flour, the sugar, the, refined stuff. And I just remember thinking and saying to other people, I don't know that I can give up that food, that one particular food. I don't know if I can give that up for the rest of my life. And people kept saying, it's just for today. You don't have to worry about the rest of your life. You don't have to worry about next week. It's just for today. And I never understood. I never understood. And so I continued to eat as if, nothing was working in my life, and my life was really unmanageable. And of course it was, because I wasn't working the program. So I went back out. I decided to stop coming in 2004. I went to Cambodia for a mission trip, and I topped out at 288 pounds. I just remember being so miserable with my body. I remember being miserable inside my own skin. Like, the person that was crammed into my skin was just the most uncomfortable, disgusting human being that ever walked the planet. And to look at pictures of myself at that point, and I was in Cambodia and Singapore, so the pictures are great, but I just thought, this is awful. Like, I can't even stand to look at her. And that really kicked off like a 2-decade shame eating spiral for me. I went through my second marriage here in Virginia around 2010. I had started working out with a trainer at a gym and dropped 50 pounds and was feeling great. But then once I started, dating my second husband, I thought, well, I mean, I've got this, so I don't need to go to the gym anymore. Well, he quickly lost interest in me and left me after my mom passed away, 5 days after my mom's funeral in 2017. So that was really kind of the turnaround year for me, that my mom passed away. She was the best, my best friend, my soulmate in this life. He left. My sister, who had moved here from Canyon Country, decided to move to Hawaii, and I didn't want to begrudge her that. So of course I said, go live your dream. And I lived in a house that needed three incomes, and two of those incomes were gone. I bought a townhouse and I got more involved in my church, and that all happened within the course of 6 months. So I just jumped into a whole bunch of stuff. Like, I joined a knitting circle, I got a second job, I became more active in my church. The knitting didn't take, so don't ask for anything. And then I just started eating my feelings again. And once it got to about mid 2024, I realized that I was headed back down to that top weight again, and I did not ever want to see it. So I knew that the only thing that was going to work for me, because I had tried the weigh and pays, I had, been on old medications that they took off the market years ago, that kind of thing. Been to the gym, I worked out with trainers, nothing worked for me, but I knew that OA was what it was going to be, the solution. So I made the decision to come back on January 1st of 2025. It was a holiday. I was off work and I was at home. I am married, remarried to a great guy who ironically is from Riverside, and we grew up together in Northwest Arkansas, and he moved here to be with me. But he went to go to work, and it was the 1st of January, and I just opened up OA.org and clicked on a meeting, and it just so happened to be a meeting based out of New Hampshire. So there's some ladies that are from New Hampshire and Vermont, and it was 8:30 on a Wednesday morning, and now every week I go to that meeting at 8:30 every Wednesday morning. Sometimes I have to call from my car because I'm, driving to work. But that was the decision that I made. And then the first in-person meeting I went to was that weekend. So what happened with me that was different from the first time that I came through the doors is that I knew that I could do this just for today. I knew that it was important for me to find someone who had the kind of program that I wanted to work. And I started looking for her immediately. What COVID had done to the in-person meetings here in Richmond is it decimated them. They're used to, I remember back in the early 2000s, there was a meeting, about like one meeting every day a week, but there were only three meetings in person here when I came back in. So after I'd been coming to meetings in virtual meetings too for about a month and a half, I met a woman who just so happened to be at a meeting with me. She came in and it was like I knew her. It was like I knew her, but I'd never met her. And as I listened to her talk, I scribbled a piece of paper, shoved it across the table at her before she got up to leave, and just basically said, "You're my sponsor. You are the one that I need to sponsor me." And she took about 2 days and she called me. She's been abstinent since 1986, and I am blessed to have a daily relationship with this woman. She is awesome, and I really do think that sponsorship for me was the difference in what happened the first time I came here and what's different now. I also decided to go to a nutritionist, which I would never would have thought that in the past, because my sponsor had asked me, "Do you commit your food?" And I was like, "Oh, what is that?" And she said, "You're gonna tell me what you're gonna eat every day." And I said, "No, I'm not doing that." So she just kindly looked at me and she said, "Yeah, all right, that's fine." And she said, "How do you handle this, your food?" And I said, "I just journal my food every day. I write down what I've eaten at the end of the day. I've been doing that for years. As a type 2 diabetic, I also log the medications I've taken and this, that, and the other." So about four months after I'd been working with her, she said, "That whole food journaling thing, that's bullshit, right?" I said, "All right, well, tell me how you really feel." And she said, "You're the only person that I have sponsored in 40 years that hasn't committed their food to me." And I said, "I'll start tomorrow." So I wake up every morning, and the way I start my day is I read for today. I read Voices of Recovery. I journal on those entries, and then I send that to her. I send her my food plan for the day, and I try to live every day in the program. I started a meeting on the south side of Richmond last November. And that was something, it was a goal that I had set for myself because there has never been a Southside meeting in Richmond. And I always felt like, 20 years ago that there was a whole population that we weren't able to get to because they weren't crossing the river. So I did that. It's been successful. We've had a lot of newcomers come in. And so now there's four meetings in Richmond. I hit a meeting every day, and there are some days where I'm at two, sometimes three meetings. And it's because I have the luxury of having an employer who knows that if my door is shut and I've written on my dry erase board, do not disturb, or I'm in a meeting, they leave me alone. If I work from home, I can do as I please, and I'm just blessed in that capacity. So it's only because of the things that I've gotten from the 12 steps, working with my sponsor, being in meetings, doing service work was really important to me. I know that if I'm in the middle of something, it's hard to fall off the edge. And so I jumped into service work almost immediately, and it has kept me stronger because I'm giving back to people who need this program. I went to the World Service Convention last fall and last summer in August. I'd never been to one. And when I got there, it was like, I mean, there were 500 people from all over the world, and I just thought I'd died and gone to heaven. So based on that, I just decided I wanted to be at more as many in-person things as I could. So there's still not a lot of in there's still not a lot of in-person stuff in Richmond, but I don't mind driving to North Carolina or other surrounding states to go to their events, and I do. And that's really been the highlight of my program these last 15, 16 months. So I'm just glad to be here. I'm glad to be in a room with people who I don't know but are like-minded and kindred spirits. And I just want to say thanks for asking me. And with that, I pass.